Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Text in Show, It's a Dog Text Dog World by Whitney Dineen and Melanie Summers, narrated by Avery Reed and Alexander Sendes. 1. Autumn. All I'm saying is that I wish you'd reconsider, my mom says, stabbing a piece of her French toast much harder than necessary before waving it through the air to make her point. You're going to spend all that money on a plane ticket, only to come right back home when you realize that life with Helen in that concrete jungle is not for you. Mom, I can handle it, I tell her while dodging a spray of boysenberry syrup as it flies off her fork in my direction. New York or your sister? Because I know for a fact you're not ready for either. She finally pops the food in her mouth to save my dad and me from a further syrup shower. You'd think the woman was Italian by her love of hand gesturing. You act like I'm some 15-year-old country bumpkin, which I'm not, I say heatedly. I am 28 years old. I've traveled the world. I graduated magna cum laude, and I have my master's degree. My voice might be a little bit louder than polite brunch standards dictate, but darn it, I'm getting really riled here. My parents and I are currently sitting in a booth at our favorite local diner, Curds and Whey. What was supposed to be a send-off brunch has quickly deteriorated into a continuation of the argument we've been having for weeks, the one where my parents continue to throw it in my face that it took me so long to graduate from college. In their eyes, that apparently means I'm not the sharpest tack. The truth is that I simply love to study everything that crosses my path and couldn't make up my mind what to specialize in. Magna cum laude in people watching, my mom scoffs, then starts furiously slicing her French toast again. It took you 8 years to get your first degree, Autumn. 8 years of flitting from major to major. People become doctors in that amount of time. This is exactly why I need to get out of Koshkonong, Wisconsin, so I can start fresh in a place where my parents don't live, where curiosity is encouraged, not reviled. Don't get me wrong, my parents love me and I love them. They just don't understand that my path is different from theirs. Taking a deep breath to steady my nerves, I explain yet again. First of all, I took a gap year. Then I took another year to work, so I was really only in school for 6 years for my first degree. Still 2 years too long, she says, pursing her lips. I don't know why we're still talking about this, I say while twisting my paper napkin with a death grip. The decision is made. I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm going to help Helen with her dog show, and in exchange, she's going to give me room and board. Also, she said that Stan has a connection to world-renowned sociologist Gladiola Sims at Columbia. If things go well, they might be able to introduce me to her ahead of time. I needlessly add, having her as an advisor would be the most amazing thing I could hope for. Yes, I can see how it's important to have a good advisor when you're not even going to get your PhD. What's that supposed to mean? I ask, then mentally kick myself for giving her an opening to share yet another unwanted opinion. This psychology thing, sociology, I correct her. Same thing. It really isn't, I tell her in a sharp tone. Whatever. I predict you're going to get bored and find some shiny new thing to go after. Then you'll be on to that, she answers. You might as well just stay home and work with Dad and me at the feed store. That way at least you can start saving for a house. My shoulders drop, and I look at my dad, who, up to this point, has been silently scarfing down his bacon and eggs. I give him a help me look, and he sets down his fork with a little sigh, then reaches across the dinged-up Formica table and pats me on the hand.
Autumn, sweetie, it's bad enough New York has already taken one of our daughters. Your mother and I are worried you'll never come back either.
So much for helping me convince my mother that I'm a serious student of human society who is most definitely going to get her doctorate and make it her life's work. Thanks, Dad. Yet the truth is, he sounds sad that I'm leaving, which breaks my heart a little. While many people resort to emotional manipulation to get their way, my dad doesn't play that game. My mom, on the other hand, will use every weapon in her arsenal. While continuing to aggressively cut through her French toast, she adds, "Besides, Helen left for college when you were only 7, so you don't really know her. You two couldn't be more different." Different is good. I love different. Plus, think of how well we'll get to know each other while I'm living with her. And not here, constantly hearing how I'm making the wrong decisions or not living my life fast enough. So much for those inspirational t-shirts that proudly declare life isn't a sprint. My sister is spearheading a prestigious new dog show in Manhattan and asked me to come there and help launch it. While I don't have the first clue about dogs or dog shows, I jumped at the chance. If all goes well, not only will Helen let me live with her and Stan while I get my doctorate, free anything in New York City will be a big help. But she might introduce me to Professor Sims, who I've been totally fangirling over ever since I read her book, Big Girl Panties Aren't Just for Girls. Kathy the Relentless, this could be my mom's Viking name, offers, "I don't think you understand how difficult Helen is." She says this like I haven't seen my sister since she left for college 20 years ago. "Mom, I know Helen's a borderline narcissist, but don't forget, I've been studying sociology and psychology for years."
"Oh, we know," she mutters, once again referring to the amount of money they shelled out while I found myself.
Although once I passed the 4-year mark, I paid for tuition myself, which is partially why it took me so long. Ignoring the jab, I say, "I'm something of a behavioral science connoisseur. Trust me, I can handle her."
"Whatever you say, honey."
She sings songs in that way she does when she's trying to placate a person she's convinced is wrong. I reach across the table and stab my fork into her breakfast. Most parents would encourage their children to form a closer bond.
Two can play at this game, Mom. "I love you and your sister very much."
She pushes her plate to the middle of the table so I don't have to reach as far to help her eat her meal.
"Having said that, I see you both for who you are. In Helen's case, that's a highly strung, social-climbing woman of a certain age who cares way too much what others think of her. That can be hard to take in large doses."
Wow. If that's how she loves Helen, how the heck does she love me? Also, woman of a certain age? Helen's 38. New York's a big city, and while I plan on honoring my agreement with my sister, I do not plan on spending every minute with her. I'll stay at her place, help her out with his dog show, and other than that, we'll go our separate ways.
"Even though I'm sad you won't be here," my dad interjects, "I'm glad my girls will have this time to become closer. After all, your mom and I aren't going to live forever. After we're gone, it'll be nice to know you'll have each other."
"My God, Bob, you make it sound like we have one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel. I'm only 62.
"Jeb Wilkerson had a fatal heart attack at 57. He ran 5 miles every morning and never let red meat pass his lips."
He had to bring up Jeb Wilkerson. Ever since my parents' neighbor died, I've considered the possibility that Jeb has become Dad's spirit animal,
whispering words of caution night and day. And believe me, the last person my mom would want my dad to emulate is old unfaithful, as she calls him. Jeb Wilkerson was cheating on his wife, my mom practically spits.
What does that have to do with anything?
Mom puts her fork down and explains. It's a lot of stress living a double life. Also, when a man is involved with two women, he'd be a fool not to worry about artificially induced heart failure.
You think Fern poisoned him?
Dad's mouth hangs open in shock. Mom shrugs before answering. When you invest 30 years into a marriage and finally pay off your house, you don't want to hand your security over to a 29-year-old named Willow.
But to kill him.
Mom dabs at her mouth daintily with the white paper napkin from her lap. All I'm saying is that Fern might have accidentally poured a little strychnine into Jeb's coffee. It happens.
Strychnine.
My dad looks at his own coffee cup and then back to my mom. Relax, she tells him. I don't have any plans to do you in.
But how do you know about the whole strychnine thing? That's not information that instills confidence.
Remember that true crime episode you slept through a couple of months ago?
Kathy, how would I remember it if I was asleep?
Mom waves a hand and says, Osmosis. Anyway, it was called accidental murder. It was all about women who have managed to get away with murder through some very inventive methods. Turns out there's an estimated 12,000 murders a year globally, conducted by women helping their husbands into the next world. Apparently, we're very good at it. Turning to me, Mom adds, You should make that the subject of your dissertation. Fascinating stuff. My dad sits back against the booth with his jaw practically unhinged.
We've been married 40 years, Kathy, and I've never cheated on you.
He's such an innocent soul that he's really sweating the idea Fern might have gone on the offensive. My mom, on the other hand, likes to see the potential in people, no matter how dark that might be. If it makes you feel better, I'll throw out our box of rat poison when we get home. Mom offers him an innocent smile, then reaches across the table to take a sip of his coffee so that he'll feel comfortable drinking it again.
Why do we have rat poison? We don't have rats.
Poor Dad. We don't have rats because I poison them, my mom replies calmly. Deciding it's past time to intervene, I say, Dad, Mom is not going to kill you. You're safe. He doesn't even seem to have heard me. He keeps his gaze trained on my mom, then, lowering his voice, says,
Did you give Fern some of your rat poison?
Mom shakes her head. Of course not. She can afford her own. So, anyway, I interrupt. My flight leaves tomorrow at 2. Any volunteers to take me to the airport? We'll both take you, dear, my mom says. Bob, tell Tyler he can bring his bat to work tomorrow so he doesn't have to go home to give it its medicine. We might as well stop at IKEA on the way back from dropping Autumn off and pick up that new area rug we keep talking about getting. Noting the surprised look on my face, my dad explains.
Tyler is nursing an injured bat back to health.
Why?
He accidentally hit it with a broom when it was flying around his head. He felt bad.
The difference between Tyler and most people, my mom offers, is that the rest of us consider a bat an unwelcome intruder in our homes. We don't offer them free lodging. Tyler's a nice kid, but he's really slow on the uptake.
Just because the boy isn't a murderer doesn't make him a dullard.
My dad defends his 18-year-old employee. Rubbing the bridge of my nose, I say, I was thinking we should leave home at about 10. How does that sound? Trying to keep these two on track is proving futile. While signaling the waitress for more coffee, my mom answers, Fine. I give it 2 weeks, though. There is no way you're going to be able to tolerate your sister for longer than that. I've only ever been to New York City twice before. Once when I was 15 and Mom and Dad took me to see Helen and Stan. We didn't stay with them because Stan was still in medical school and Helen was waiting tables. As a result, they had no money and their apartment was so small it barely fit them. The second trip was during my second year of college. My roommate and I had heard about this great program called Standing Up for Broadway, where you can see the shows for as little as $20. The only hitch was you had to stand in the back of the theater to use them. After 3 shows where I was either situated behind a pillar or next to a pervert who tried to grab my butt, I gave up and spent my money at museums and restaurants. I credit this trip with the start of my love of people watching. Standing here in the cab line at LaGuardia, I feel an odd combination of excitement and dread. Most people my age have been productive members of the workforce for years. Even if they're not working their dream job, no one thinks they're flighty and irresponsible because they are, in fact, working. But that doesn't matter anymore. I'm in New York and am determined to get my PhD from Columbia and become one of the world's top sociologists, like the Jane Goodall of people. Not only will I finally garner the respect from the naysayers, my parents, but the world will be my oyster if I can study under Professor Sims. It's a gorgeous fall afternoon with the sun shining brightly on the East River as we inch onto the 59th Street Bridge toward Manhattan. It's a perfect day for new beginnings, and I'm so excited I don't mind that the traffic is barely moving. This amazing city is going to be my home for the foreseeable future, and I can't wait to explore every inch of it. The cabbie, Vinny, according to the badge hanging on the dashboard, asks, You visit in or do you already live here? I'm moving here.
Best city in the world, he says proudly. My great-grandparents came here from Sicily, and the whole family's still here. What do you think about that?
That's quite a compliment to New York, I tell him. My sister lives here with her husband, and I'm going to stay with them while I study sociology. I'm not sure he cares, but it's nice to make small talk with the person you're parked in traffic with.
Sociology, is that like majoring in Facebook or something?
He laughs at his own joke. At least, I think it's a joke. I chuckle along good-naturedly. Something like that. Social media has become a very real part of human behavior, I explain. Sociology is the study of people.
What do you do with that?
I could do anything from human resources to guidance counseling to becoming a lawyer, but I think I'd like to be a college professor.
Huh. My son Salvatore went to junior college, and he's making ravioli for a restaurant in Little Italy. Sophia, my daughter, got in the family way in high school, but she's taken some classes online so she can be a dental hygienist. They make good money, those ladies. Education is a beautiful thing.
That it is. Traffic finally breaks open, and Vinny reacts like a cat being shot out of the live end of a cannon. Veering wildly into another lane, he hits the gas and yells,
You gotta make the most out of an opening.
Pulling myself back up into a sitting position, I valiantly attempt a smile. By the time we pull up at my sister's brownstone on the Upper East Side, I'm ready to throw up.
Your sister lives here,
he whistles.
Nice digs.
Her husband is a plastic surgeon, I offer by way of explanation. Vinny makes a huh sound, then adds,
I didn't think surgeons made enough for this neighborhood.
I think plastic surgeons do okay for themselves.
Yeah, but not this well, he says, shaking his head. This is the kind of place where you normally find your real estate moguls or your Wall Street wizards. Mostly, though, it's those silver spoon babies who live like this.
Apparently, Vinny the cabbie is a real estate expert. Since I don't have the first clue what a place like this would run, I'm not about to argue with him. After he pulls my luggage out of the trunk, I pay him, adding an extra big tip for being such a fun character to observe. Then I lug my suitcases up the 14 steps to Helen's front door and ring the bell. When no one answers, I sit down next to her enormous topiary and pull out my phone to send her a text. Me. Helen, I'm sitting on your doorstep. Is your doorbell broken? When she doesn't answer, I text my parents. They share a cell phone, if you can believe it. Autumn. Hey, Mom and Dad, I'm here. Just wanted to let you know I made it safely. MND.
Okay, how was your flight?
My dad is responding. I know this because he feels that using all caps is a way to show enthusiasm, even though I've told him a million times that people read this as being yelled at. He doesn't buy it. Me. Good flight. Crazy traffic. Nice to be here. MND.
How's Helen?
Me. I don't know. She's not answering her door. MND.
Maybe her doorbell is broken.
Me. Could be. I'll knock and see if she hears that. I just wanted to let you know I arrived safely. MND.
Thank you, honey. We love you.
I spend the next 30 minutes intermittently knocking on my sister's door and sitting on her steps. I'm starting to get seriously miffed when the lady next door comes out, stands on her stoop, and stares daggers at me. She's wearing a silky dressing gown with what I would swear are real fur cuffs. She's like a character out of a 1940s movie.
Why are you just sitting there? Do I have to call the police?
She demands with her hands on her hips. Not unless you really want to, I reply rather unkindly. I'm a firm believer that turnabout is fair play, and with her attitude, I'd start flinging tomatoes at this broad if I had any. After the snooty neighbor goes back inside, the sun begins to fade and the tip of my nose freezes up like an ice cube. I wonder if Helen forgot I was coming today. When a town car pulls up 2 hours later, not only do I really need to use the bathroom, but I'm super mad. The driver jumps out and walks around to open the rear passenger door. My sister steps onto the sidewalk, looking like she's been eaten and then regurgitated by a Chanel boutique. When she sees me standing on her doorstep, she does a double take before asking, Autumn, is that you? Hi, Helen. Did you forget I was coming today? I'm 100% sure I am not masking the irritation in my voice. That's because I'm not trying to. I didn't think you'd be here until later. She glides up the steps to join me. Looking me up and down in a way I can only read as condescending, she reaches out an arm to give me a half-assed hug. I thought you guys had a maid, I say accusingly, like she's conspired to keep me from the toilet I so desperately need. Why didn't she let me in?
Magda only comes on days we have company.
Am I not company? After putting her key into the lock, Helen swings the front door open. I follow her in and am struck speechless by the grandeur of her foyer. An impressive staircase is on the left side. A table hosting a giant flower display is right in the middle, and an elevator is on the right. The chandelier hanging overhead positively screams, I'm worth more than you'll ever make in a year. Or in my case, 8 times more.
Wow.
It's all I can manage. This place is a far cry from the 3-bedroom farmhouse my sister and I grew up in. While I understand Helen is proud of her home,
Who wouldn't be? The look on her face can only be described as smug. I'll show you to your quarters. She tells me as she leads the way through the entry hall into a spectacularly impressive all-white kitchen. Opening a door next to her refrigerator, she stands back and gestures for me to walk in. I'm staying in the pantry? I ask, dumbfounded. But then I enter the room and see a twin-sized bed and a small dresser. She turned her pantry into a bedroom for me? I thought you had 5 floors here. Don't you have any guest rooms? We do, but we're about to start a major redecorating spree of all the guest rooms, so you'd be totally disrupted if we put you upstairs, she says, pulling a face. Stanhope and I thought you'd be more comfortable in the maid's quarters anyway. After all, it's got to be a giant step up from a dorm room with a shared bathroom. There are so many things wrong with what she just said, starting with the fact that they call the walk-in pantry the maid's quarters. Also, assuming I'd be more comfortable in here than in a regular bedroom. But let's set those aside and narrow in on who the heck Stanhope is. Who's Stanhope? My husband? Helen asks incredulously in a "you're too stupid to live if you don't know my husband's name" tone. I thought your husband's name was Stan Lee. You know, like the Marvel Comics guy. Don't be silly. It's Stanhope. She rolls her eyes before staring at me like she's trying to fire a laser out of them. Then she adds, also, people here call me Helena, so I'd appreciate it if you could get into that habit. What are you talking about? Your name is Helen Mary Smith. Not anymore, she says, looking like a mugger threatening to stab me in a dark alley. I finessed it to something that suits my essence. I'm Helena Marguerite now. Also, our last name is Smythe with a Y. We changed it back to the original spelling before Stanhope's family immigrated. Do not forget to call me Helena. I don't want anyone to get confused. I don't know what kind of morons my sister hangs with that they would be confused by hearing an abbreviated version of her illustrious new name, but whatever. I'm starting to worry that my mom is right, and staying with Helen may be the worst idea I've ever had.
2. Jack.
So, Dr. Campbell, do you think you can save him?
Mrs. Peltz asks me, leaning over her pudgy teacup chihuahua Bane. Her impressive cleavage is in jeopardy of smothering the little guy. She licks her lips and bats her eyelashes, completely unaware that I'm not interested. Well, Mrs. Peltz...
I already told you. Call me Muffy.
Right. I'm never gonna do that. As far as I can tell, Bane here is just fine. I've already listened to his heartbeat, checked his gums, eyes, ears, nose, and throat, felt around for lumps and bumps, and palpated him for any areas of pain. Other than being overweight, your dog is perfectly healthy. I turn away from her and walk over to my computer, then type in the file patient brought in with B.O., which doesn't stand for body odor. It's for board owner. Fortunately for my bank account, the Upper East Side is full of them. Stay-at-home dog moms with nothing to do but invent reasons to bring their fur babies in. Honestly, sometimes I feel more like a stripper who doesn't take his clothes off than a veterinarian. Some of these ladies treat me like I'm a piece of meat. I've been working with them for 4 years now, one of which was as an intern with my mentor, Dr. Long. I worked with him for a couple years as a full-fledged vet before he sold me his practice. They didn't treat him like a piece of meat, but then again, he was 76 when I started working here.
I'm sure something's wrong with Bane,
Mrs. Peltz says, picking up the brown and black dog and holding him to her chest. He shakes away in her arms with those huge, buggy eyes trained on me. It's as if he's saying,
please help me, I don't want to be wearing a ducky bow tie. I switched him over to that food you told me to buy, and he won't even touch it.
Really? I ask, What's he eating then, because he's clearly well-fed? Mrs. Peltz looks down guiltily.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?